Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Everything House Music and More. And my special guest today, I have to say, he's a legend. He's a pioneer that people forgot about and don't talk as much as about. And we're going to find out some truth today. Y'all ready? You ready to get into it, Mike?
Yes, sir. I am.
Would you like me to call you Michael, or is it Mike okay?
Mike is fine.
Okay. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, Mike Winston, y'all.
Hey, Maurice, how are you?
All right. Okay. So you ready to get into it?
I'm ready to get into it. I'm grateful. Thank you for having me out
here. Oh, brother, I thank you, man. I thank you. So here we go. Let's go.
Yes, sir.
Mike, what year did you discover disco and how?
Discovered disco. I discovered disco, I think, during the big disco era in the 70s, early 70s, early mid 70s.
Okay.
With Donna Summer and the Bee Gees and all those disco cuts.
Right.
And I got all into that. I loved disco music back in the day.
Right. Now, did that disco demolition have a lot to do getting into disco, or that was after that?
No, it happened during.
Okay.
I remember when that happened. I didn't understand why he would do that.
Right.
You know, because, I mean, he didn't want disco anymore, which made no sense to me because it was disco and very popular form of music. It was then, it continues to be.
Right. So when did you start DJing?
That's a tough question, Maurice, because I've always loved to play music. And I was playing music in the cafeteria in high school. I went to Hales Catholic High School.
Okay.
And so I'm playing music in the cafeteria, and I love playing records. In college, in the meantime, in high school, I had invested in a couple turntables,
okay,
and in a mixer from Radio Shack,
right.
And I started, you know, experimenting, mixing songs together, but not really mixing them as far as beat matching,
right.
Or you know.
So you said it was two Pioneers turntables.
Two Pioneers
turntables. And then what type of mixer was it?
It was a Radio Shack mixer. I don't know what kind of, they had a name for those. I think it was just a Radio
Shack. Realistic mixer, yeah.
Realistic, exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it was.
Okay.
And so I had one of those, and I learned how to, I didn't really mix, but I learned how to like play a record and let it trend, let it fade out.
Right.
And as it was fading out, just bring the next song in.
Nice. You know, so at that time when you was playing around on the turntables,
yes,
what music was popular at that time? Or what songs?
Okay, so at that time, right after high school, I was in college. I was going to Chicago State, and I joined a fraternity. In my freshman year, I joined a frat. And I joined Alpha Phi Alpha fraternity.
Okay.
And I immediately started DJing for the college parties.
Right.
You know, and their rec center. Those were really pretty big parties.
Right.
Pretty intense. And I was playing a lot of, a lot of disco.
Okay.
Freak Out.
Okay.
By Chic.
Okay.
And all of that,
right.
That stuff like that.
Right.
The popular disco cuts back in the day.
Yeah.
But also, I was a funkster.
Okay.
A funketeer.
Okay.
So George Clinton stuff.
Nice.
Funkadelic, Parliament.
Okay.
I love that stuff.
Right.
You know, Rick James.
Yeah.
I was playing all when as that stuff was coming out. I was playing it.
Nice.
I loved it.
Nice. So were there any other DJs out there that influenced you at this time?
No, I didn't know. I didn't know of any DJs at the time. I was going out to, I was particularly going to a club. I accidentally went into a club called The Den.
Right.
The Devil's Den.
Okay.
And this DJ in there was off. I mean, I had never heard anything like that. And this guy was DJ, he was spinning and mixing, the songs were blending together, and I had never heard anything like that.
Right.
And I'm sure, I never got introduced to that DJ, but I'm sure it was Ron Hardy.
Oh, wow.
You know?
Okay.
And he played, he put on Love Hangover.
Okay.
That beginning of Love Hangover, And I was like, damn, I've got weak in the knees. You know, I was like, and that place was it was weird.
Right.
You know, they had the bartenders dressed up like, they had beers and shit, but they were dressed like ballerinas. Right. Just weird shit. I'm like, this is strange.
Okay.
I don't think I'm not supposed to be here.
Right. You know? So a lot of people might don't know your story. So that's why we're doing this.
Sure.
And the reason why people don't, because you was the official Power Plant DJ.
Yes.
With Frankie Knuckles.
Yes.
So my question before here is going to be, so which did you do first, or what came first? Did you meet Frankie Knuckles first or the warehouse?
I met Frankie at the warehouse.
You met Frankie at the warehouse.
Just by chance. Well, actually, so I was at his last birthday party, celebrated at the warehouse.
Okay.
He was celebrating his birthday. And I remember the party, because when the party was over, it was that morning, and they were putting the antennas on the Sears Tower.
Right.
they had helicopters.
Wow.
Putting the antennas up on the Sears Tower.
Okay.
So that's how long ago that's been.
Right.
That's when that was. But that night, Frankie played Help Is On The Way. With that organ that comes, that intro, and all the blacked the lights out, and right. This was my first time there.
Right.
And they blacked the lights out, and I walked down in that pit, and I saw the lights and the sound was, I never heard anything like that.
Right.
You know? It's just cringeworthy. I don't know. And when he played Help Is On The Way and that organ is,
right.
all I could do was start crying.
Wow.
My tears started running down my face.
Really?
That the emotion that came from that.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, who is this guy?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm standing there looking at him. But he's standing there looking at me. So me and Robert has a debate. I know that there was a gate in front of his DJ booth, like a fence.
Right.
And I was standing by the fence with my elbow on the fence watching Frankie.
Wow.
You know, I'm standing there just looking at him. And he was looking at me.
Yeah.
And all I could see is the booth was dark, but I could see his eyes.
Yeah.
I could see the whites of his eyes. And he was sitting there. And, you know, I guess he got tired of me standing there gawking at him.
Right.
So he sent his boy. He sent Butch, recently passed away.
Okay.
But he sent Butch, was in the booth. And he sent Butch over. He said, Frankie said, come here.
Right.
You know, beckoned me into his lair. and so he sent Butch over, and Butch opened the gate.
Right.
And he had a bar table set up with a couple bar stools and stuff. And, they, you know, so he said, have a seat.
Right.
And I said, wow. Okay. So he had a bucket of champagne, Dom Perignon.
Ooh.
He said, champagne? I was like, sure.
Okay.
So he, you know, poured me a glass of champagne.
Right.
I was like, oh, this is cool. You know, he was like, so I'm Frankie Knuckles. I was like, yeah, I know who you are.
Right.
I was like, I'm a DJ too.
Okay.
So he's like, really? You, Frankie, could do this thing? Really?
Right.
So he gave me that, really? I was like, yeah, you know, I'm a DJ too. My name is Mike Winston.
Okay.
And I spend, you know, he's like, okay. Cool. So that was it.
That was the conversation. Okay.
You know, but I made it clear I'm a DJ too, Brian. You know, you ain't all that.
Right. So did you ever DJ at the warehouse?
No.
Never. Okay.
Nope.
Okay.
But so he's offered me these party favors, and then he gave me the glass, the mirror. It's like cocaine.
Sure. Really? Just like that, huh?
Just like that.
Oh, Frank was really feeling you, huh?
Oh, yeah. Sure, absolutely, I'm on cocaine.
Right.
So you know, did a few lines of coke and shit, and then, but he's still playing this music. The Peach Boys came in that night.
Okay.
He was like...
At the warehouse. Okay.
They were, you know, you could go directly into the DJ booth off the street.
Okay.
That door on Jefferson led with the DJ booth was right there.
Okay.
And so he was like, I need you to help these guys bring their equipment in. It was the Peach Boys.
Right.
They performed Don't Make Me Wait.
Yeah, wow.
You know, so that night was amazing for me. I was like, wow, this is something else. And it was Frankie's birthday party.
Wow.
Yep.
Okay.
And that's when I met him.
And that's when the relationship developed between you and Frankie.
The next day he called me. He called me while I was at work. I gave him my phone number.
Okay.
And he called me. He was like, I would like to make dinner for you. I was like, okay, when? He was like, tonight. So I said, okay.
Right.
So he lived up at on 3200 North on Lakeshore Drive.
Okay.
And so I went over there, you know, and he made chicken parmesan.
Oh, so Frankie could cook.
Frankie was the best cook besides my mom.
Wow.
The best cook that I know of.
Okay.
He could really cook.
Okay.
I mean, really cook, make gourmet type meals.
Wow.
Yeah, he was a great cook.
Okay. Yes. Okay. All right.
Absolutely.
Okay. So let me ask you something, Mike.
Yes, sir.
How do you believe the culture of house music, not the genre where it gets a name, developed as a culture? Not the name, not where it came from, but just the culture
of house culture. I would say it originated. That culture was brought here from New York by people like Frankie, Robert Williams. You know, they brought that culture here from New York.
Okay.
And they began doing those type of events. Like they were doing in New York, they were doing it here. They started doing it here. Places like The Loft, Robert Williams was doing parties. But just given that element of house, that culture, you know?
Right.
The way the parties were arranged, the way that the decorations, the, you know, the sound system, the entire package.
Right.
You know?
Right.
It was its own different culture. It was okay. Different than.
So it wasn't here in Chicago at first.
Well, kind of it was.
Okay.
So I want to go back to when I started spinning. I was going to these clubs, okay, and I wound up going to Dingbats.
Dingbats had
Mr. T was the bouncer.
Right. Right.
he still had all the gold chains. Yeah. He was a bouncer.
Exactly.
At Dingbats. And they had a DJ, Mike Izibuku.
Mike Izibuku. Yeah.
And I met Mike in Dingbats. And we talked. I talked to him. But I saw him. I saw how he was playing the music. And he was scratching with the records.
Right.
I was like, I can't do that. And I went home and tried to do it.
Right.
I was like, but I didn't have no slip pads. So this isn't going to work.
Right.
I was like, I can't do this. So I got frustrated. But in the meantime, in the interim, I'm going through changes now. This is before I went to the warehouse, by the way.
Okay.
I'm backtracking a bit.
Okay.
Because I haven't met Frankie yet.
Right.
But I met Mike Izibuku.
Okay.
And Mike Izibuku was also spending at a place called Rialto.
Okay.
And I wandered in Rialto by accident.
Right.
You know, it was one of those places you go in there and you're like, oh, shit. I don't think I belong here either. It was like a saloon, though.
Okay.
It was very exciting in there.
Okay.
You know, there were gay people.
Right.
There were transgenders people in there.
Okay.
There were straight guys in there.
Okay.
Just all kind of white people, black people.
Okay.
Everything. It was
at Rialto's. Right.
It was a real melting pot in there. And it was very violent. there would always be a fight, like a saloon fight, like a bar fight.
Really?
In the Western movies.
Wow.
It was like they would throw barb swords.
Okay.
It was wild. The place was, but I loved it, you know?
Right.
And I started going there, and I became, the first night I walked in there.
Okay.
And in 10 minutes, I had 6 beers sitting in front of me.
Wow.
What is he having? Send him a beer. Send him.
Right.
So I'm like, damn. You know, I had my afro and stuff. I was beautiful. You know?
So
they liked the beauty. And so, you know.
Okay.
And so I was there. And I became a regular in Rialto. And Mike Izibuku reached out for me. He said, Mike, why don't you start spinning here?
Okay.
And I was like, well, Mike, I don't think I'm ready for this. He's like, yeah, come on, spin. So they gave me Sunday afternoons.
Oh, wow.
In Rialto, I started spinning. That was my first DJ gig.
That's your first professional DJ gig.
That was my first professional.
Okay.
I don't know if it was very professional.
Wow.
But so in that
interim, at that time then, what was your biggest record at that time?
I'm going to say stuff like, I'm trying to think back to that.
No, I get you.
You know, again, I was still liking a lot of funk stuff and funky stuff, but a lot of kind of more up-tempo stuff, Tina Marie.
Okay.
You know.
So you wasn't playing a lot of disco at the time?
Not really, because I didn't know how to, you know, I still wasn't able to blend music. But Mikey Zibuku started teaching me how to slip cue records.
Okay.
And I said, oh, this is how you do that.
Right.
So he said, you need slip pads. And so he took me, Mikey's, people say, did Frankie teach you how to mix? No, technically, Mike Izibuku.
Mike Izibuku. All right. So that's a lesson right there.
Yeah. So Mike Izibuku, you know, showed me how to cue records and put them together.
Right.
And it was up to me to learn how to, where to bring it in, how to bring it. I had to do that myself.
And this is BF, before Frankie, everything.
This is all before Frankie.
Right.
So by the time I got to Frankie, I was able to tell Frankie, I'm a DJ too,
You a DJ too. So let me ask you this. Do you believe the warehouse was special?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Now, were there other, like, black gay clubs for men at that time during the warehouse?
No.
Okay.
No. Wow. There were other, I won't say there were no others, because there had all, like I said, Robert was involved in, like, the what was it, the Loft or the Gallery,
right,
whatever those clubs were called before the power, before the warehouse.
Before the warehouse.
There were
warehouse
clubs, but, right, you know, they never really took off the way that the warehouse did.
Okay. Now, do you know why the warehouse ended? Did you get any type of gossip or anything about why did the warehouse really end it?
I think it was a zoning issue, and they lost, like, they lost the license to really have those parties down there.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, there was a zoning issue, I believe.
Okay, okay. So now comes the power plant.
Yeah, about maybe a month or two after the warehouse closed, Frankie was given an opportunity, presented with the opportunity to take over a club called the Riverside Club that he had been spinning at even during the time of the warehouse. He was spinning at the Riverside Club too.
Okay.
But it was a white club.
Okay.
It was basically a white club, and they decided they didn't want to do the business anymore.
Right.
And so they offered that to Frankie, and he took over. He took the reins.
Right.
And we were walking down the Halsted one day.
Okay.
And he was like, what are we gonna call this club? And we looked over in the power lines going behind. You could see the square building.
Okay.
And it was just a picturesque moment. We were looking at this, these power lines. And,
get out of here. So that's where y'all came up with that.
Power plant.
Get out of here.
He was like, let's call it the powerhouse, Mike. I was like, power plant, Frank.
The power plant.
Power plant. Call it the power plant.
Wow. Yeah. So that's, you guys were just walking down the street.
Just walking down the street and looked over at the power cables, power plant.
Wow. Get out of here. Okay. So back then, how many people did the power plant hold? And then what nights were they open?
We were open Friday nights, and we tried another weeknight party also, but it really didn't go off too well.
Okay.
So we basically, Friday nights was our night.
Friday nights. Okay.
Midnight, Fridays at midnight.
Now you were the original, you and Frankie.
Yes.
And not saying you're opener, but you started the night at midnight.
Right. I was the opening DJ.
Okay.
I was the opening DJ.
So midnight to 3?
Yes, pretty much about the first.
And then Frankie comes in after that.
Then Frankie came in. So normally when I left home, sometimes I would go by the house and I would be at home.
Right.
And when I leave, Frankie's in bed watching. Frankie used to love to just lay in bed on Friday nights and watch videos, the video shows.
Right, right.
They just go back to, I'm like, why do you watch this crap, Frankie?
Right.
He's like, I like it.
Right.
I'm like, how can you watch it? He would just lay there and watch those videos.
Yeah.
And he enjoyed doing that. But he would be doing that until he'd get up to get prepared for the party.
Right.
Maybe get an hour getting himself together. And
right,
and come down to the party about 3 in the morning.
Wow. So you being the original DJ there.
Yes.
There were no other openers for the power plant but yourself.
No. Well, there are those that claim to be the opening DJs at the power, one of the opening DJs.
Okay.
At the power plant. Certain individuals like to take that title. I was an opening DJ at the power plant.
Right.
And I kind of step in and say, well, no, you are not.
Right.
You might have opened a couple parties, 2 or 3 parties at the power plant.
But you wasn't a regular.
No means were an opening DJ at the power plant.
Wow. Okay. So what was the power plant like inside? And did it compare to the warehouse?
It was comparative in some ways and others not. When Frankie came to me, he said, Mike, we're gonna go in business and we're going to open a club. And I was like, really?
Okay.
He said, yeah. Going to be, you know, we're going to take it to Riverside Club.
Right.
I was like, really? And I've been to a couple parties down there.
Okay.
With them spinning. It was okay. It was a white party.
Okay.
A white boy party. So it was, No, it was okay.
So it was a white club?
It was a white club, absolutely. Okay. Yes. But, you know, so Frankie said, I'm going to, you know, we're going to turn this into our club.
Right.
And I was like, okay. And so, you know, he had the business cards printed up before the club even opened.
Right.
And I don't know if you've seen those cards before. This is our business card.
The membership cards?
No, it's just our business
card. No, I didn't see the business card before.
Power plan says Mike Winston, Frankie Knuckles Management.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So that's our business card.
Right.
You know.
So it was only just two of you guys
yes.
running the power plant.
Yes. Well, there were other people, to say running that club, it was a lot of people involved in that.
Okay.
You know, you had a guest on a while back, Kevin Abdullah.
Right.
So Kevin disappointed me deeply because he went through a whole plethora.
Right.
He name dropped millions and millions of names of his favorite DJs.
Right.
And there was one DJ he didn't mention, you know?
That was you.
Me.
Yeah.
And, you know, we worked together.
Wow.
I went to bat for this guy.
Okay.
You know, I got into fights with Frankie over Kevin
right.
because Kevin lived with me and Frankie for a while because his mom had put him out. And so he came to stay with us for a while.
So you and Frankie used to live together?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I did not know that.
For a number of years.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
So, yeah, we you know, we eventually, after the power plant closed, well, so here's the story.
Wait, let's after, before then, let's still go to, so the essence of the power plant inside.
Okay, the essence of the power plant inside. So the sound system was amazing. Okay.
So there was a sound system already there because of the
there
last
was a
club.
Sound system, but Frankie kind of gutted it.
Okay.
He called for Richard Long to come from New York.
Okay.
To recondition that sound system to
right.
make it what it was supposed to be.
Okay.
You know, because they had a Richard Long sound system in the warehouse.
Right.
And they took that sound system out of the warehouse and put it in the music box, which lost its.
Yeah.
Essence has lost everything because it was designed for the warehouse.
Warehouse, right.
And so you put it in these other spaces, it sounded like shit. It
right.
sounded crappy,
right.
but it was very loud.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
and Ronnie beat the shit just unrelentlessly. and so the kids loved it. I didn't like it.
Right.
You know, because Ronnie was, among other things, completely tone deaf.
Right.
You know?
Wow.
And so he had no, I don't think he had any sense of loudness.
He just wanted just loud and
just, he's just banging yeah. shit out there,
right.
you know. But that was his style, and the kids loved it.
That's crazy that you said that the sound system was in there. So on my last interview with Celeste Alexander,
yes.
she said she was a silent partner because she gave Frankie some money for the sound system.
I know, right.
Now,
which is crazy
okay.
talk because... You, like I said, when we went through the transition of opening the power plant, Frankie
right.
sent for Richard Long.
Okay.
I don't remember her being at any negotiations with Richard
okay.
Or anybody else.
Right.
You know, talking about, well, Celeste, you're going to help pay for this equipment.
Right.
you know?
Right.
So, no, that didn't happen.
Okay. Okay. I just want to make sure that you was there from the beginning, Mike. So I'm just trying to get it. Like you are a little godfather right now. So we got to get the correct story. So as you being the opener DJ at the warehouse,
yes,
were you ever told by Frankie, like, don't play this record, don't play that record, or you would just
never
no holds bar?
Frankie admired what I did. I don't know why he liked, I don't even understand why he liked me the way
okay.
that he did
right.
or why he chose me
yeah.
to do the way that he did. And that turned a lot of people off.
Right.
They didn't, they it immediately.
Just hated.
You know, they hated, you
yeah.
know, haters, you know.
Wow.
They're like, why is he getting to do this? Who
yeah.
is this dude? You
right.
know, because when I came on the scene,
okay.
you know, they already had their circle of people, the warehouse circle, the warehouse clique and everything.
Yeah.
And I wasn't a part of that.
Okay.
And even when the power plant opened, I wasn't a part of that clique with that clientele.
Right.
You know, I had my own group of circle of friends
yeah.
that regularly came to the party.
Okay.
You might have interviewed some of these people, talked to them. You know who some of them are.
Right.
You know, and, you know, Kenny Ray.
Okay.
You know, Kenny Ray.
Yeah.
Kenny Ray was a regular. He was at, when I got there every night, every Friday night. Uh-huh. Kenny was like, "You got me, Mike." so every Friday night he was there,
right?
You know, right. And so when this other when the individual made the statement about I was the opening DJ,
right?
So of course Kenny Ray was like, "What the fuck?"
Right.
What is he talking about? What are these people talking about?
So Mike, let me ask you this.
Yes.
Since you was playing there, what records do you remember being Power Plant Records at that time?
Power Plant Records. So there were a lot of the old classics. So one of my favorite songs is Queen Samantha.
Okay.
That was one of my go-to songs. Do you know that song?
I do not know that one.
It's Queen Samantha. I'm trying to remember the name of the song.
I'll put it underneath when we get there. Yeah.
So that was
one of your go-to records.
One of my go-to records.
Now, were you playing the Italian disco at that time too?
I was, absolutely.
Okay.
Yes. The big labels.
Yeah. So you play like Freeze, AEIU, stuff like that.
All of those.
Really? Okay.
You know, I love the Tech Sound.
Yeah.
Giorgio Moroder.
Right.
I Wanna Rock You. Magnifique.
Magnifique,
you know,
yeah.
I used to love to play Magnifique. I would play that was Frankie's song.
Okay.
But I would play that. I'm playing this.
Right.
I'm going to play this.
Okay. Before. So here's another question. So we're going to stay right here at the Power Plant, but let's go back a little bit. I like to hear your story. Now, we have the elders like DJ Wayne Williams.
Yes.
He told me that a lot of the straight kids, black straight kids at that time,
yes,
wasn't calling disco. They was calling house music because they heard that term used because their parents were playing disco music in the house. So they said, oh, that's the house music.
Yes.
So where do you think the term house music came from?
Well, according to my knowledge, my wisdom, my the things I've witnessed,
right?
Imports etc. was a record store down on Plymouth Court, and they sold Frankie. They sold the music that Frankie was playing in the warehouse.
Okay,
and they had a whole section of Frankie's music and Imports etc.
Okay,
and there was a sign pointing out the section of music saying warehouse music here, and the guy were pointing warehouse music.
And what would be in that bin then, Mike?
Just the basic, the stuff that was coming out at the time. I really can't. I'm trying to think of something that was coming out exactly at that time.
Okay.
But
it would be some disco records because that's what Frankie and you guys
there was more up to date stuff. The Sal Soul label, there was a lot of Sal Soul stuff in there. A lot of the current sales, like the Peach Boys,
right?
Would have probably been in
that
there.
That would have been in there. Okay, yeah, gotcha.
So, you know, stuff like that, more modern music.
So Imports played a pivotal role. And also naming that culture, which is house music.
Absolutely, they did.
Okay.
That's where that term came from. And then Chippy dropped the song, It's House.
Right.
So now it's on, now they're saying it in a song.
Right.
And so the night that Frankie played It's House, he played it on a tape. It wasn't a record yet.
Okay.
He played the tape that I guess Chippy had given it to him. And he played that tape, and the whole club went crazy.
Wow! No, so let's stay right there then.
Yes.
So besides Chippy coming down to the Power Plant, of course we have to talk about Jamie Principle with Your Love,
because
that was the a classic record for Frankie and you guys.
Yes.
Now, were Frankie was the only one that's supposed to play that, or were you able to play that record as well?
I didn't play it.
Okay.
I did not play it.
And the reason for that was why?
Because Frankie was playing it.
Okay.
That was his baby, so to speak.
Okay.
So that was his thing. So no, I didn't play it.
So were you there when Jamie came down and brought it to Frankie first?
I did. I was there. He brought it to our house.
Oh, wow.
Jamie was at the house a number of times.
Okay.
I remember Jamie waiting on my angel, that little tinkle sound.
Right.
That's Jamie sitting at the kitchen table banging on a pot.
Get out of here.
You know, and they affected it to make that sound that it was making on the record.
So did Jamie record it before the Power Plant or during the Power Plant?
Your Love?
Yes.
I want to say it was probably, so the guy that actually wrote Your Love wasn't Jamie.
Okay.
I can't remember this guy's name. I'm sure you would know who he is though. He made a few other tracks. He made a house, another real popular house music track.
I gotta find that. I thought that was Jamie, but I'll look into that.
No, definitely. Jamie, that's Jamie's song.
Right.
But the track was written by this other producer.
Okay.
He's a producer.
Okay.
Yeah.
I will find that out.
Yeah, so he actually wrote Your Love.
Right. So one of those records, besides, okay, Your Love, It's House, what other genre of a house that came into the power plant that Frankie used to play that people went up on? Now, let me ask you, did he play Jesse's On and On record?
Probably not. I want to say not that, that those tracks.
Yeah.
Frankie wasn't real big. I was more of a track guy.
Okay.
You know, I would play a lot of the tracks.
So did you play that record?
Probably. Okay. I'm sure I did. Okay. Yeah.
What was your biggest, say, Chicago house record you played? I know you say it's House, Your Love, but what else that came through their doors that you was like, wow, that made the club go up?
Okay, so my all-time favorite song, and I played it as often as I could, was Dr. Love.
Dr. Love.
You know? And as you know, I get into debates all the time. People say, well, that's not house music. Well, I say it is.
Okay, but that's a disco record, though, Mike.
This is disco. Right. Absolutely, it's disco. Right. But it's house.
Wait. Let's go back now. Because you just said earlier that house music didn't come from the parents playing house in the house.
The
and
term. The right, name, the term. The name.
Right.
The name. But that culture, that essence of what house music is, that's a whole different type of feeling.
Yeah, but that's still disco, though. So it's still a disco. Disco. And I believe the reason why I felt like that, because Frankie was playing that at the warehouse.
Frankie was playing it at the warehouse.
Right. So that's what we determined that house.
Walk the Night, Walk the Night.
Right.
His house.
So let me ask you this. What Chicago record, not Chicago disco, but the black straight teens that came in there that gave that record for Frankie, so people to hear, like Chippy,
yes,
Jamie Principal. What was some other records that passed through the door at that time?
There's just too many. I wouldn't say there's too many to name. I wasn't prepared. I should have written a list down.
No, it's okay.
Of the music that was coming through there. But there were a lot of people that would, give Frankie music. Yeah. Frankie didn't play most of it.
Okay.
You know, he didn't play a lot of that stuff that he was getting his hands on. Okay. And then some of it, I got it. I heard it. I played it.
Oh,
you know?
Wow. Yeah, that's how
I was getting. I think I played Mystery of Love. I'm sure I played that before Frankie heard that. You know, I was playing it. I had a cassette tape.
Wow.
Someone had given it to me.
Yeah.
And they had given it. It wasn't released yet.
Yeah.
It wasn't even that was in a form that didn't even resemble the way that it wound up on the record.
Nice.
But it was definitely Mysteries of Love.
Yeah.
And I played it. I had a cassette deck with a pitch control on it.
Wow.
So I was playing cassettes with pitch on it.
Okay, so for the tech nerds, can you talk about the sound system and the DJ booth at the power plant? What was the setup? What type of mixer did you guys use?
Okay.
And then,
mixer was Bozak.
Bozak, okay.
I believe the amps were Marantz.
Okay.
And the crossover, three-channel crossover, Richard Long.
Okay.
And that crossover effect that Frankie was using, no one else was doing that. You know, so no one was using the crossover the way that he did. They were trying to go home and use their EQ and have that effect.
They're trying to take it out, right?
And it's like, no, that's not working. Why can't I do this like Frankie?
Right.
You know, because he was controlling the individual frequencies, the individual volumes, the amps, the output coming from the amps. So you can just take all the highs out or bring them back in or lower.
And what type of monitors was inside the DJ booth?
No monitors.
No monitors at all?
No monitors at all.
Get out of here.
The sound was so clear.
Okay.
And the power, you didn't need them. And that's amazing. Isn't that amazing?
That's amazing.
That we didn't need, we had no monitors.
Wow.
You know, monitored from the dance floor.
A lot of people don't know that, man. Okay.
Monitored off the dance floor.
So besides the power plant, did you DJ at any clubs regular?
Not really, other than Rialto and... I was doing a lot of club parties. I was doing parties for these club organizations.
Right.
And they would be having these parties. One of the first parties I did that I invited Frankie to.
Right.
And again, this is right before the power plant opened.
Yeah.
But I invited Frankie to this party at Robert's Motel down on Cottage Grove.
Oh, yeah.
And they had a really big, it was about maybe three or four people in that ballroom down there. Huge party. And I was that DJ in that party.
Wow.
And this is one of the bartenders at Rialto that had heard me playing. And so he had me DJing his club party at Robert's Motel.
Yeah.
And I invited Frankie down there. And, you know, Frankie bought me a bottle of Grand Marnier. And, you know, I can drink real well alcoholically.
Right. So you was all right then.
And I'm a blackout drinker. And I woke up the next morning in a room in the hotel. You know, Frankie was in there. And he was like, "So you got drunk last night, Mike?" I was like, "You think?" Because I have no recollection of the end of that party.
Right. Wow. So, Mike, why did the power plant close?
The power plant closed, I believe, for zoning ordinances that were changing downtown in the downtown area. So they pretty much were no longer welcome down there.
Wow.
And so they just shut it down.
They just shut it down.
They just shut it down.
So let me ask you, why didn't you go with Frankie to New York at that time then?
Oh, so that's a really great question, Maurice. And I can't really give a definitive answer for that question, except other than not willing to chance it, not willing to leave home. And so there were several things going on in my life at the time.
Okay.
I had an issue with addiction.
Okay.
And that's something that started as a result of the bad influences from the powers that be in Frankie's circle.
Wow.
And so they were introducing me to these drugs that I had never... I smoked a little weed when I met Frankie.
Right.
I smoked a little weed every now and again. And maybe we'd take a tube of cocaine every now and again.
But you said they was like inside the Kool-Aid, they would put the MD...
but then there was that. Right. So I had never... I didn't know anything about that drug until I met these people in Frankie's circle that had access to these drugs.
Wow.
Acid. I'd never taken acid.
Wow.
I'd never done MDA. Yeah. I'd never tried any PCP.
Right.
You know, any of these drugs. Well, angel dust, I had tried that before in high school, too.
Okay.
I took a hit of that green shit up. And no, actually, it was TAC.
Okay.
They had that PCP comes in.
Right.
It comes in a liquid form and it dips cigarettes in it.
Wow.
Or it comes in green mint leaf or... Okay. Or angel dust, or it comes as a powder form called TAC. So all of those are forms of PCP. And I snorted some PCP out in Washington Park and we were playing softball.
Right.
And I hit that shit and then I jumped up to catch the softball and I looked down and I could see the whole lagoon and all the
trees. Was high. You was high, brother. You was high.
I saw all the people running
around. But we thanking God that you broke that addiction.
I think I've been through so many changes with that whole process of addiction and my personality. I've learned, you know, throughout the course of my education, that I'm an addicted individual.
You have the addictive behavior.
I was born that way,
right?
You know, I knew that I was born that way because when I was a little kid, I liked nothing better than to spin it around in a room, until I just passed out on the floor and the room would be spinning, and that was my trip. And my mom was like, "What are you doing?"
Yeah.
I was like, "I'm getting drunk."
Right.
I'm trying to get drunk. So I was like three.
Well, I'm glad you got out, man, by the grace of God.
Right.
And I thank you that you got past that, brother.
Yeah. So, but so you ask about the
Well, I asked you about the closing the power, and you said that, but then you said
you asked about the
punch that was
punch,
in there.
The punch, right?
Yeah.
So that punch was prepared before the party. You take an ounce of MDA, it's white powder. It looks like cocaine.
Right.
It looks just like cocaine.
Right.
And it's a white powder, and you take it and you dissolve it in a pot with water, and you can get a quart mayonnaise jar and pour that punch, that liquid into that jar and take it down to the party. And then you can just take that.
So you tell me everybody that went to the club that drank that Kool-Aid, that punch.
Absolutely.
They was on something.
Absolutely.
Wow. You know?
And that shit was so... I used to love playing music on it because it takes the music. I would sit here today and say right now, there would be no house music without that drug.
Wow. You know,
without that drug in the warehouse and whatnot, those people would not have been able to have that that feeling.
So,
that
everybody was just feeling it, no matter what. You're gonna definitely have a feeling when you go there.
And it takes the music to it does several things.
Wow.
First of all, they call it the love drug because it gives you this sense of feeling a connection with another
person. So all y'all was Diddy before Diddy.
Absolutely. That's why, you know, I can't blame him. I was like, I get that.
Wow. You know,
I get that. Absolutely, I get that.
So Mike, let me ask you this question.
Yes.
If Frankie was here right now,
yes,
do you think a lot of people would tell you these stories about who was here, who was there, who DJed here, who was for? You think that story would be going on if he was here?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why I you know, sometimes I have to push back and people accuse me of being the gatekeeper. I'm not being a gatekeeper. I'm just trying to keep this culture, this thing on some type of track because you guys are getting all over the place with it and it's going in all type of directions and, you know, you're destroying what this culture once was. It bears no resemblance right now.
So do you think there's gatekeepers right now, since you just said that? Do you think there's gatekeepers in the house community right now?
I don't know who they could be or what that is. I don't even know what that term means. I kind of know what it means, but I don't think, because I'm not the official on house music. I've got details. I know things that have happened in my lifetime where house music is involved.
Right.
And, you know, that's all I got is my story, the way that I see it, the things that I've experienced. And I've experienced a lot, I believe, in this community, this thing we call house music.
So, Mike, let me ask you, all these things they're doing for Frankie, like the foundation, everything in the memory of Frankie or the warehouse or just Frankie in general, why do you think you're not a part of that history right now?
Well, because the powers that be. So this clique of individuals, you know, Frankie's friends, you know, the Frederick Dunsons and Craig Loftus and, you know, first of all, they resented me for, you know, this new kid. I was a new kid on the block.
Right.
You know, and like I say, I didn't really fit into their mold or that. I never really tried to be any of their friend or associates or anything like that.
Right.
You know, I was just Mike Winston.
Right.
That's Frankie's boy. You know.
So you think because the relationship you had with Frankie that they all hated on you and then held this grudge at all this time?
I would say yes. I would say absolutely yes to that question.
Okay.
Yes.
Wow.
You know? Yes.
Okay. All right. So Mike, what do you want people to know about yourself and house music?
Okay, well, I think first and foremost, I love the whole concept of house music, what it was.
Yes.
You know, the whole community of house music, what it was, once was, because it was completely different. Then now it's splintered all over the place and everybody's doing their own thing. It's kind of like when they tore down the projects, and now all of these folks went up to the different areas.
they're everywhere now.
They got all these different gangs, and everybody's killing each other, and they all just killing each other.
Yeah,
and so this whole house community is doing the same thing. It's splintering and fighting against each other, and nobody's winning.
Right,
you know, nobody wins. It's this battle.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, the only people that can win are the people that really remains true to what this was, and there aren't many people like that.
And you know? And it's funny that you say that because Mike, I listen to your music, your mixes. I think you're a great DJ. You play great music. What do you say to some of these people that's out here that's still playing 30 and 40 years later, the same songs that you guys used to play at the power plant in the warehouse?
I can't explain that other than they love that nostalgia, whatever they get from that. I don't know exactly what that is because I've always, when it comes to playing music, I've always wanted what's new, what's progressive, what's good.
Right.
You know, and you know, they will give you the argument, well, they don't make good music no more. They don't.
That's a lie.
You know, it's a lie, right?
Yeah.
So, but that's their lie. And that's, they abide by that and they live by that. A lot of the promoters want people, you know, Craig Loftus, you know, told me for my birthday, you know, I'm going to put you on early because you can't play later night, because these people don't want to hear that music that you play.
Wow.
You know, they're not going to want to hear that because you don't have the taste. You know, you don't have the same taste that I've got in music.
What?
We don't agree to.
Wow.
But, you know, so this is Craig Loftus telling me
this. Yeah.
You know, who claims to have been the opening DJ at the power plant.
Right.
And he's still playing a lot of the same songs that were played in the opening sets.
Well, it's not only Craig. I mean, it's a lot of people out there that's playing. Yeah.
A lot of them.
Yeah.
The classics. And we're playing the classics.
Right.
Everybody don't need to hear the classics.
Right.
Let's move. This thing is progressed. It's not.
I'm glad, man. You know what? As an elder and one of those guys that's been there in the forefront and developed the scene, I am really honored to hear you say that.
Yes.
Because there's not a lot of people think like you do. Yeah.
And I'm honored because I understand that you understand.
Yes.
Because you're the same way.
Yeah.
You were there at the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, the early years.
Yes.
And now your music, I'm still playing your new music.
I appreciate it.
Which is amazing.
Yes.
You know?
What you've done
your whole career
is
amazing, Maurice.
I appreciate it.
And I admire that. I respect it.
No, I thank you, Mike. I appreciate it, man. And that's what I want people to know your story.
Yes.
Because as we go on with this, I don't want you to get left behind because of some people's egos and everything else that they have against this. Because I believe if you was on that flyer and you was Frankie associate and part of management, you have a history in this. Because it wasn't for you guys, a lot of people wouldn't be doing what they're doing. Sure. And here's another thing. What do you think about the Hot Mix 5?
Well, they were great. They were good. They were doing their own thing.
Yeah.
I don't think, you know, that's they're considered house,
right.
I guess. But what they were doing had nothing. It bore no resemblance to what we were doing, like at the clubs, the power plant, the music box.
Yeah.
So they were doing something completely.
Well, I think they took the round where, you know, they played to millions of people every weekend.
Yes.
So they got the music out there more.
Okay.
To the masses.
Yes.
To what you guys can do. Because, like you said, the power plant only hold like about 400 max, correct?
We were underground. And
right.
And we were our music. And
yeah.
So that's another thing. I meant to mention this. Before, the music that we were playing was called house music.
Right.
It was called, we were calling it underground music.
Underground music.
That's what it was called.
Okay.
It wasn't called disco or anything like that. We were calling it underground.
Underground.
This is underground music.
Okay.
You know, and that kind of morphed into what house music became.
Right. Wow. See, that's some gems right there, y'all. So, Mike, what do you want to tell the people, or what do you want people to really know about Mike Winston?
Okay, well, I need to say I get a lot of pushback because I make a lot of comments, you know, not so loving, you know, about what's going on in this culture today.
Yeah.
You know, from the chosen few on down, you know, I often bait the, you know, I got into a whole, this thread went on Facebook for maybe 4 days,
okay.
A whole week, because I posted about their last picnic.
Okay.
And I made a post. I don't remember what I said about it, but whatever I said about it, it started a whole conversation.
Wow.
I wish I could find that thread.
Okay.
But there were a lot of people pro what I was saying in that conversation, and a lot of people that were against what I was saying.
Right.
Because the point I was making was that it's unfortunate that they're having this event in Chicago, and they're getting these out of town. They're booking out of town DJs to come here and play at this picnic, and there are people here. Mike Winston, I've never been invited to play at the Chosen Few picnic.
Get out of here.
Never.
All right, Wayne and Alan and Terry, everybody, man, we got to have Mike Winston on there, man. Come on, man.
They've said, you know, Alan told me several times, I'm gonna get you on there, Mike. You know, he told me that 10 years ago.
Okay. But, well, maybe it wasn't time. Maybe your time is this year that's coming up, man.
This is going to be in God's time.
There you
sure.
go. But, I mean, I think they should have you, man, because let me tell you something. From what I've heard, you can outplay a lot of these cats, man.
Yeah.
Because, and your taste in music is critical, and I think it's great, man.
Well, thank you for saying that.
I appreciate you for doing this.
Yes.
I definitely wanted to get your story out there, man.
Yes.
And I love you, brother. I appreciate you.
If it wasn't
for you, well, none of us would be here because you're part of this history.
Yes, sir.
And I think you get left out a lot. And I think people need to know who Mike Winston really is. And I hope this podcast, Everything House Music and More, does that for you. You know, make sure you subscribe, click the bell for notifications for every time you see this. Mike, where can they reach you at? They need to get a hold of you.
I'm at mwinston01 at yahoo.com. I've got four or five Facebook pages. I'm kind of on there. I've got maybe 180 mixes on SoundCloud,
which is good.
A lot of those mixes are like 5-6 hour long sets.
Yeah,
so they're pretty lengthy. You know, some of them are shorter, but
right.
You know, I love to just stand there and play. I'll stand there and play a 6 hour set in my bedroom.
Wow.
You
know? Yeah.
You know.
Well, that's good. So they can reach you on Facebook.
Sure.
They can reach you on your SoundCloud.
Yes.
And once again, Mike, thank you for doing this. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
And appreciate you, man.
Thank you, sir.
Peace out, man.
All right.